Well, please turn in your Bibles to Hebrews chapter 11, the passage I read earlier. It's going to be helpful to you if you have that open in front of you. Page 854 if you have the Pew Bible. So we've been working our way through the book of Hebrews, the letter to the Hebrews. And we've come to this famous chapter, this list of men and women who are examples to us of faith. So to remind you, if you like, the book is written to these Jewish Christians, Jewish converts, who are facing increasing difficulty, increasing trials, persecutions, because they've become Christians. And they're wondering if it's all worth it. They're thinking they're probably best to just turn their back on things, go back to the way they were before. So the letter is written to show that Jesus Christ is worthy of their faith. To show how superior to all that they were clinging on to before. And to show them that they should press on and cling on to him. And this chapter 11, has this recurring phrase, by faith, so-and-so did something. By faith, we have Abel and Enoch and Noah and Abraham, with Isaac and Jacob and Joseph, and then by faith, Moses. By faith. Faith is the prime theme in this chapter. It is the most important idea. It's repeated again and again. And the author takes the form of this list of examples. It's a rhetorical device, if you like. It's designed to challenge people to action. It wants a response. And the writer is showing that there's overwhelming evidence, if you like, that this pattern of faith, this is best. And the writer is arguing that the people of God are to be people of faith, even in the heart, in the face of difficulties and being disheartened. So we get to Moses. Why is Moses in here? He's one of those pivotal figures in the history of the Jewish people. He is a picture of deliverance, a picture of being rescued, a picture of salvation, leading the children of Israel out of slavery. So far, chapter 11 has mostly dealt with individuals. This section is going to deal with Moses, yes, the leader, but it's also going to talk about some ordinary Israelites. So if you're taking notes, if you like headings and points, my first heading, my first point. Faithful parents. Faithful parents. Verse 23 tells us, by faith, Moses' parents hid him for 3 months after he was born. We read the account of it in Exodus 2. Why is it his parents had to hide him? Well, the Israelites are in slavery in Egypt and their numbers have grown. And Pharaoh is concerned that there are too many of them. And he gives this command. Every boy that is born, every Hebrew boy, is to be thrown into the river Nile. In 1994, a small African country that most people had probably never heard of. Certainly most people couldn't find it on a map. It shot to prominence. It became famous. Became notorious. The name of the country is Rwanda. If you type Rwanda into Google, into an internet search engine, you will discover what awful sin lies in the heart of men and women. What profound wickedness people are able to do to people. Over a 100-day period, 3 months. Nearly 1 million people, 20% of the population of the country, were killed in a terrible genocide. You could put yourself in the shoes of a Hutu man. A man called Damas Jasimba, running an orphanage, hiding 400 Tutsi children and adults, protecting them from the men who came with guns and machetes, hiding them above the ceilings, under the beds, in the back of cupboards, in toilet cubicles. Why did he do that? And why would he risk his own life to save these people in terrible danger? You see, we read Exodus 2 and we're kind of insulated from the horror of it by 3,500 years. But you can think of the news images and you can remember the horror of Rwanda or of Cambodia or of the Holocaust. That is the horror of what is described in Exodus 2. The children, the boys, the baby boys, to be thrown into the river to drown, be eaten by crocodiles. It's horrendous. And there are these two parents, Amram and Jochebed are their names. They already have two children. One's a boy called Aaron, and there's a girl called Miriam. And they have a baby boy. We don't know what they called him. We don't know what their name for him was. But they hid him for 3 months. That's the 100 days of Damas Jasimba hiding those terrified Tutsis. If you've ever had spent any time with babies, you know it's quite hard to keep a baby silent. You could imagine at 2 o'clock in the morning. It's bad enough when a baby's crying at 2 o'clock in the morning anyway. But knowing that if the baby is heard, not only will it wake up your neighbours, but the baby will be killed. Can you put yourself in their position? Can you imagine it? What do? They hide this child. Why do they do that? Well, obviously there's this parental love. There's the thing that any parent would do for their children. But something else is going on here. By faith, Moses' parents hid him for 3 months. They saw he was no ordinary child, and they were not afraid of the king's edict. As you read from the letter, the pastoral letters, those letters are written in the New Testament to counsel people. The idea of fear is a recurring thing. People are told not to be afraid. In the last chapter of this book, chapter 13, the writer is going to say, quote these words, "The Lord is my helper, I will not fear. What can man do to me?" By faith, Moses' parents were not afraid. By faith, the people of God are able to overcome their worst fears. And this letter is written to men and women who are afraid. Men or women who know what persecution means. Who know what it is to be in danger. Who know what it is to lose possessions and privilege. And to be in prison. By faith, the people of God are able to overcome their worst fears. And these first century Christians who are being written to, they would also fear the king's edict. They would take encouragement from this. By faith, parents are able to protect their children. Our children are not in danger of attack or being thrown into the river. But they are under threat. There is evil in our society. And Christian parents realize that the devil prowls round like a roaring lion, looking for whom he can devour. That is what Satan wants to do. And parents resist the devil by standing firm in their faith. Parents resist the devil by building strong spiritual homes in which they train their children to fear and to love the Lord. And they take their children along to a church where they'll be taught the scripture, taught the Bible. They pray for their children by faith. See, Moses' parents did everything they could for Moses over those 3 months as they kept him hidden. Afterwards, when Jochebed acted as nurse to him, nurtured him, taught him, there in that lowly slave hut. Now, how would his parents, how would they have felt about having to hand Moses over to Pharaoh's daughter? Having to send him off to the pagan life of the palace. To a false religion where the Pharaoh was treated as God. Maybe you're a parent. Maybe you wonder what's going to happen to your child when they're thrust out on their own into the world. Maybe your child is only young and is about to start school. Maybe your child is due to go off to university. And you wonder what is going to happen to them. And when they come out of that nurturing, supportive, godly environment, and they're confronted by a world that is secular and antagonistic. Moses' parents would have shared that concern and then some. But by faith, they were not afraid. You see, something remarkable happens. By faith, the next verse tells us, verse 24, by faith, when he had grown up, Moses refuses to be known as the son of Pharaoh's daughter. Moses is described in the Bible as the friend of God. He chooses to be the friend of God rather than to be the son of Pharaoh's daughter. So that's faithful parents. Secondly, I want to talk about faithful vision. Faithful vision. A little while ago, there was an elderly woman living in a small house in Oxford. And she was disposing of some things that she was given by her father. And she invited this art expert, if you like, to come and look at these things he'd left her. And so he came and looked at these paintings. I don't know about the second or the third visit. He spotted some of the paintings. They were painted on wood and they were propped up behind a door. And this artist saw him. I thought they looked interesting, he said. He thought they might be Tuscan. He thought they might be from the mid-15th century. Imagine how amazed he was. Imagine how amazed the woman was when they discovered that they were famous lost works by a friar from Florence. They'll go on sale next year and they'll sell for $1 million. You see, he saw the pictures and he saw that they had value. She had seen the pictures many times. I'm sure other people had been to the house and seen the pictures. But it took someone with right vision, with that proper insight, to recognize that they had real value. By faith, we are told Moses, he regarded disgrace. Verse 26. He regarded disgrace for the sake of Christ as of greater value than the treasures of Egypt. Why? because he was looking ahead to his reward. He had a right perspective. He had a right vision by faith. Verse 1 of Hebrews chapter 11 tells us what faith is. It is the certainty of things that we haven't seen. Andy, this morning, talked about that eye of faith, of finally seeing. Moses has got everything. He is the son of the princess. He has social status. He has riches. He has access to all the pleasures that Egypt can offer him. And he sees them as nothing compared to Jesus Christ. He regarded being disgraced for the sake of Christ as of greater treasure, of greater value than the treasures of Egypt. So I want to encourage you this evening to be like Moses. That by faith you would see what things are imperishable. You would see what things are of greater value. Moses chooses to be ill-treated along with the people of God rather than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a short time, verse 25 tells us. Chapter 11 follows chapter 10. You knew that, didn't you? Chapter 11 follows chapter 10. Turn back a page and look at chapter 10 and verse 22. Look at the situation of the people that the writer is speaking to. Remember those earlier days after you had received the light. After you came to understand, you came to see. You stood your ground in a great contest in the face of suffering. Sometimes you were publicly exposed to insult and persecution. You suffered disgrace. At other times you stood side to side with those who were so treated, like Moses choosing to be ill-treated along with the people of God. You sympathized with those in prison and joyfully accepted the confiscation of your property because you knew that you yourselves had better and lasting possessions. The eye of faith sees that. Moses chose to be ill-treated along with the people of God. He identified with those of God's people who were being mistreated. The Hebrews, chapter 10 and 33, stood side by side with those who were so treated. God's people have been persecuted today. You might have heard on the news, two or three weeks ago, I suppose, about a series of deaths. Hundreds of people killed in a place called Jos in Nigeria. Killed because they were Christians. People are still being killed in Jos. In the last week, three journalists writing for Christian papers have been killed in Jos. Hundreds of people have been killed this year. You could look at the situation in Pakistan. I picked this quote up. Daily incidents of violence such as rape, abduction, and torture of Christians appear to be countenanced with official indifference in Pakistan. That's what it's like to be a Christian in Pakistan. That's what you can expect from the state. Official indifference. How do we identify with God's people who are suffering? How can we do that? Well, we can write. You could express your concern. You could give. There are organizations that work specifically among those who are persecuted. You can pray. And whatever else you can't do, you could pray. One writer says this, the ministry of preaching is open to few. It is an enormous privilege to stand in this pulpit. Sometimes it's a terrifying privilege. But it's open to few. But the ministry of prayer, he writes, the highest ministry of all human offices, is open to everyone. God's people must be praying for God's people. Faithful parents, faithful vision, faithful endurance. Verse 27. And by faith, he, Moses, left Egypt, not fearing the king's anger. He persevered because he saw him who was invisible. Now, Moses was not a particularly young man. When he turns around and kills the Egyptian, this isn't the kind of impetuous rage of a 21-year-old. He's 40 at that point. When it speaks about him leaving Egypt and not fearing the king's anger, it's most probably speaking about the events around the Exodus. So he goes off, at 40 he kills the Egyptian, he runs away into the desert, he spends 40 years there and comes back. He's now 80. Now, Andy might have upset people this morning by talking about certain people being old when they were in their mid-40s. Moses is 80, which any way you look at it is kind of getting on for being old. And he is persevering. Because by faith, he sees him who is invisible. Faith is being certain of things not seen. He's 80 when he starts leading the people. He's going to carry on leading them for another 40 years. He'll be 120 at that point. In which case, we could call him old men, surely. He persevered. Why? He saw him who is invisible. He saw, his eyes were fixed. Glued. Focused. On that which is invisible. He does this by faith. We're told he persevered. He endured. Callum's going to be baptized next week. That's wonderful. Callum's 11. Okay. But you can't really describe him yet as having endured. Under God, he will. Pray for him that he will. But he hasn't endured yet. I don't know who the oldest person here is. I'm not going to ask you to put your hand up. But you've endured. You are pressing on. Moses, he endured. He persevered. There's a wonderful quote from one of the early church fathers, a guy called Polycarp, who at the age of at least 86 was arrested for being a Christian. And he was threatened with death. And he was told, curse Christ. Curse Christ, you'll be free. Polycarp says this, 86 years have I served him, and he never once wronged me. How then shall I blaspheme my king who has saved me? He's persevered. He's endured. He's pressed on. You might think sometimes, perhaps you're not a Christian. Perhaps you're not saved. Perhaps you think to yourself, you're too old, you're past. This is all for youngsters who were all impressionable. And it's not too late for you. You need to pay attention. You are nearer the end than these youngsters. Turn to Jesus Christ. The need is more urgent now than when you were young. It is not too late. Hebrews 11 commends the faith of the elderly. Of Moses at 120. Of Joseph, who's mentioned in the verse before, by faith, Joseph, when his end was near, he died at 110. The verse before that talks about Jacob, verse 21, faith by faith. Jacob, when he was dying, blessed each of Joseph's sons and worshipped as he leaned on the top of his staff. He is so frail, he has to cling on to the top of his stick. You'll forgive him for that. He's 147 at this point. Unless you are older than Abraham, who's 175 when he dies, this chapter includes you. Faithful endurance. You cannot do it yourself. You cannot do it in your own strength. But by faith, Moses persevered. Faithful parents, faithful vision, faithful endurance, faithful obedience. Verse 28. By faith, he kept the Passover. What is the Passover? Well, when God told Moses to go and to lead the people out of Egypt, out of slavery, Pharaoh wouldn't let them go. And so God sent a series of plagues to convince Pharaoh to let them go. And Pharaoh still wouldn't. And the last of the plagues, God tells Moses that he's going to come among the land and he is going to destroy the firstborn. The oldest son of every house is going to die. Even the firstborn animals are going to die. Now, I'm an oldest son. I expect some of you here are oldest sons. You'd be dead. And God says to Moses, if you take a lamb and you kill the lamb and you roast it to eat it, and you take some of his blood and you paint it on your doorframe, when I pass through the land, I'm not going to destroy you. I'm going to spare you. And this slave people, working, back-breaking work for their masters, are given this message to do this. This bizarre ritual. If they do this, if they're obedient, they'll be spared. Now, it's not some kind of magic going on here. All right? This is not something that's kind of witchcraft. No. It is not even the blood on the doorpost that is going to save the people. It is the people's obedience to God that saves them. Those who obey the Lord's command, those who place the blood of this unblemished male lamb on their doorframes, they're spared. Why? They demonstrate that they are placing their trust in a sacrificial death. They believe that something else can die on their behalf. That God has prescribed this sacrificial death for their salvation so that they can be saved. And it's a picture. It points forwards. The Bible makes it very clear that this event is an image, is a picture. It foreshadows the sacrificial death of Jesus Christ. The Bible describes him as being our Passover. It is his blood that spares us from God's wrath that we deserve. Jesus Christ is our Passover lamb. He dies in our place. He dies so that we don't have to. He dies because we deserve God's punishment. We deserve God's wrath. And he takes it on him. And faith in that blood saves us. And this isn't just Moses in this verse. By faith, Moses kept the Passover. Yes, he kept the Passover. But the people did it with him. God's people are those who have faith in Jesus' blood, the blood that saves them. Faithful parents, faithful vision, faithful endurance, faithful obedience. Lastly, briefly, verse 29. By faith, the people passed through the Red Sea as on dry land. God has come through Egypt and destroyed the firstborn. Pharaoh is enraged. In the middle of the night, he tells Moses and the Israelites to get out. They're not very far down the road when he realizes, hang on, who's going to build my pyramids for me? So he gets his army and he starts chasing them. And the Israelites have managed to get as far as the Red Sea, and they've got their backs against the sea, and Pharaoh's army is coming towards them. Moses told, stretch out your staff, hold it out over the water, and the sea separates and divides. And when the Israelites walk into the sea, the sea is piled up on either side of them. And they walk through, and they're safe. And the Egyptians follow them in. And the wheels come off their chariots, and they get stuck as the Israelites step out of the water, out of the seabed on the other side. The sea collapses back in, and the Egyptians are destroyed. There's an irony here. You'll remember that the Egyptian command was to destroy the Israelites by drowning. It is the Egyptians who are destroyed by drowning. They had acted in faith. The water there piled up on either side of them and then walking through the middle of it. This is the obedience of the people. And they're victorious. They're delivered. This is the deliverance of faith. By faith, the people passed through. Why? Because they had listened to the instructions that God had given to Moses. They had acted in faith, and God had delivered them from their enemies. Put yourself in the shoes of the first readers of this letter. First century Christians, knowing hostility and trouble. Well, they could be encouraged to believe in the God who does impossible things. And all the might of the Roman Empire, all the hostility arranged against them. But by faith they would triumph over their difficulties. And they would discover that these terrifying obstacles in their way were an opportunity for God to display his power and his faithfulness. And that his word could be taken seriously. By faith, all these things happen. It is an example to us. We're to have faith. It is the key theme in this whole chapter. By faith. Do you have faith? Do you have faith in Jesus Christ?